You're listening to Showtime
on URN.
Hello, I'm Ella Vodrinska from Showtime, URN's specialist musical theatre show, and you're listening to our podcast Spotlight On, where I'm here keeping you up to date with all the latest theatrical news. And the big thing this week is that Matthew Bourne's Sleeping Beauty is here in Nottingham at the Theatre Royal. It's part of a tour celebrating the 10th anniversary of the show, having first opened at Sadler's Wells back in 2012, and therein completing New Adventures trilogy of the Tchaikovsky ballets, along with The Nutcracker and, most famously, Swan Lake. And so, as with any Matthew Bourne show, you enter into this 10th anniversary production of Sleeping Beauty with high expectations. And as with any Matthew Bourne show, you're not disappointed. Sleeping Beauty is a gothic, romantic, high art extravaganza of dance and theatre from beginning to end. It completely reinvents Tchaikovsky's classic ballet with Matthew Bourne's trademark wit and flair that we've all come to love, mixing traditional fairy tale elements with visual humour and puppetry and contemporary plot twists that bring it right up to the present day. I mean, the story starts in 1890, where we meet a scene-stealing puppet version of Princess Aurora, who is causing havoc for the royal household, you know, crawling up curtains and ducking in between legs in what can only be described as truly masterful puppeteering that brings the house down. Like, I do wonder how the actual dancers must feel, given that this puppet gets by far the biggest laughs of the show, but it's testament to Matthew Bourne's creativity and intuitive thinking that, unlike most traditional versions of the Sleeping Beauty ballet, this baby, and therefore the character of Princess Aurora, is put front and centre in a really dynamic way from the very beginning. She is not just a static doll in a cot anymore, and we as an audience actually get a flavour of her character from the very start, which really helps us invest in the story. Though I will say as well that those early scenes were really elevated even further by the genuine exasperation of Sophia Hurdley as Miss Maddox, Aurora's nanny, who brought eye-rolling to a whole new level, and also the kind of stiff upper lip determination of Ben Brown as one of the palace footmen, who, I have to say, captured my attention in every scene he was in with his commitment to storytelling and humour. I had the biggest smile on my face watching him perform. But going back to the plot, things take a turn when the evil fairy Carabosse breaks into the palace and places her oh-so-famous curse on baby Aurora. Now, this part was played by Jackson Fish, who was gloriously and glamorously intimidating in the best possible way as Carabosse, and then later as her son Caradoc too. And I really enjoyed the antagonistic dynamic between him and Count Lilac, the King of the Fairies, who was played by the ever-impressive Dominic North. Of course, as we know from the traditional fairy tale and the Disney film too, the good fairies manage to fend off the curse to an extent and instead foresee that Princess Aurora will be saved by her true love, which was really nicely presented in this ballet, with the adult versions of both characters performing in blanked-out masks. It was just top-tier theatre right there. I loved it. But we then skip forward to 1911, where Aurora has come of age and is now played by the truly effervescent Ashley Shaw. Now, I've seen Ashley in a number of New Adventures productions by now, including when I was lucky enough to interview her for the cinema release of The Red Shoes back in 2020. And she is just always such a privilege to watch. And Sleeping Beauty is no different. She plays Aurora as this free spirit full of youthful exuberance, mixed with such ease and conviction of movement. And it's just mesmerising to watch. Not to mention, there is such genuine chemistry between her and Andrew Monaghan, who plays her love interest Leo, the palace gardener. He is endearing and tender and charming and a damn good romantic hero, I have to say. I will also mention at this point that even though these were the performers I got to see in Sleeping Beauty last night, it doesn't mean you'll have the same people if and when you go to see it. Like many New Adventures productions, Sleeping Beauty has a rotating cast, so each of the performers involved knows various different parts and they will alternate who plays what at each show. And I love that. Like, first of all, kudos to everyone for knowing so many different tracks, because it is hard enough to learn one that well. But it also means that both the audience and the dancers get to experience something different each show. It keeps things fresh, it keeps things exciting, and it gives everyone a creative space to perform on stage without things stagnating too much. So that is something to bear in mind if you go to see the show. The other thing is where this version of Sleeping Beauty begins to deviate from the traditional plot. Because for most of the first half of the show, it's kind of just Matthew Bourne's interpretation of the classic ballet, perhaps with more humour and panache, if you want to call it that. But we've hit all the usual fairy tale marks that you'd expect from the Sleeping Beauty story, including at the end of Act Two, just before the interval where Carabosse's son Caradoc seduces Aurora and causes her to prick her finger, thus enacting the curse and Aurora falls asleep for 100 years. It's a story we all know. But this is where it gets Matthew Bourneified, because it is then revealed that the fairies are actually vampires, and Leo the gardener willingly gets bitten so that he can wait to be reunited with the princess when she wakes up in 100 years. Which is just genius for so many reasons. For one, vampires are cool. They just are. So it gives the story a much more contemporary feel, which is then reflected in the dance styles and costuming in the third and fourth acts after the interval. Not to mention the fact that we do also leap forward 100 years to 2011. So we're literally in a contemporary time. But it also clears up the awkwardness of having Aurora being woken up by a literal stranger. I mean, it's always the sticking point with Sleeping Beauty, isn't it? As with so many other fairy tales, the big romantic gesture of kissing her awake in this case relies purely on a lack of consent, and then suddenly everything's fine and dandy and two strangers are in love and they live happily ever after, the end. It doesn't really work as well with a modern audience. So bringing in the vampire element and this idea of immortality kind of solves that perfectly, because we know that Leo is already in love with Aurora and that that is reciprocated. So it becomes this genuine romantic and heroic gesture that he has waited 100 years, camped outside the palace grounds, and then he enters into this dream world to go and rescue her. Like, the first half of the show is great, don't get me wrong, but everything after the interval, when we move to the modern day and follow vampire Leo on his quest, it's just as flawless as it gets. It's so dark and romantic and stylish and balances this beautiful woodland dreamscape with Caradoc's nightmarish vampire club where he's going to force Aurora to marry him. And on that note, I have to mention Les Brotherston's designs. He's responsible for both the set design and the costumes, and as you'd expect, everything about it is spectacular. The sets are grand and dynamic and just gorgeous to look at, whether it's the mirrored windows of the palace or this big sweeping curtain that gets brought across or the stripped back trees of the dream world. The stage always looks beautiful and frames the space so well, including some truly ingenious use of travelators to watch out for. But the beauty of the overall stage design is more than matched in each of the costumes as well. They are so intricate and detailed, and I know that Les makes a great point of making things as period accurate as possible, so you get this wonderful blend of eras and genres, almost like to combine a 1910s garden party with the modern day, and then also this fantasy realm of vampiric fairies is no mean feat, but they work together seamlessly. And then I also have to shout out Paulie Constable's lighting design as well. I bloody love good lighting, and it's the sort of thing that a lot of people don't necessarily notice or appreciate fully, because lighting just kind of fits in with the rest of the show when used well. But the use of light and shade in particular in this production is simply stunning. Like, everything about it is so effective, and that is what you can expect from a new adventure show. It's just exquisite. You know, I remember reading a review of a Matthew Bourne production once that said you don't really go to one of his shows for the dancing, it's more for the overall effect. And I get it completely. It never feels like you're watching just a dance show. It feels like you're watching a large-scale theatre production. And that's not to overlook the actual dancing in any way. The choreography is sublime as always, and every individual character and move is just so well thought through. But when you combine everything together, you get this glorious display of theatre, and no one does storytelling and theatre through movement quite as well as Matthew Bourne. Like, I am very aware that I am saying all of this and the run here in Nottingham is already pretty much sold out, so good luck trying to get a ticket. I mean, do check, because this is a show that you absolutely ought to see, but the tour will be continuing after this week in Nottingham, so I will leave a link here in the post where you can check all the other upcoming dates and venues if it's going to be easier for you to catch it elsewhere. But really, I want you to consider this a public service announcement to say, jump at every opportunity you have to see a Matthew Bourne show, whether that's live in a theatre or a cinema broadcast, or when they show one of the filmed versions of his productions on TV. Like, his version of The Nutcracker is still available to watch on BBC iPlayer after it was shown at Christmas. Whatever way you can engage with a Matthew Bourne show, do it. There is no other choreographer who has become such a household name or who has brought this style of dance to such a mainstream audience so successfully. Like, you don't have to be a fan of traditional ballet. You don't have to know classical music inside out. You can be a complete novice and you will still fall in love with a Matthew Bourne show. Sitting in the theatre last night, there was such a mix of people in the audience, and that was so lovely to see. And every single person was hooked from start to finish. The women sitting next to me were so enraptured that I reckon there could have been an earthquake and they would not have noticed. That is the power and the magic of dance. And we are so lucky that Matthew Bourne and New Adventures have been able to capture that and translate it on the stage for us. So whether you see Sleeping Beauty in Nottingham or not, take this as your warning that if you're not already on the metaphorical Matthew Bourne train, you need to get on now because you are missing out. And on that note, I will say goodbye to you for now. Of course, I'll be back again on Sunday 1st at 6 p.m. with Showtime live on URN1350.net for non-stop show tunes and theatre news. And then I'll be here at 7 o'clock straight after that with a brand new spotlight on, where I'm actually going to be chatting to the cast and crew of the University of Nottingham's very own Musicality Society, all about their upcoming show, Legally Blonde. You do not want to miss it. You can also follow along on Facebook at URN at Showtime and on Twitter at Showtime URN to make sure you never miss a moment, because, as we say, the showtime must go on. Until next time, goodbye.
You're listening to Showtime
on URN.